Thank you, Eric. So welcome back, everybody.
Yeah. Come on back in and work.
That's right. Andrew was here yesterday.
Sure
Jacob was here. Ursa showed up. Round, round, get around. I get Mike around, was all week sitting in for Tom. I see people sitting at their desks. I'm like, oh, now you decided to come in? Oh, okay. Take off for the holiday?
We don't get a holiday here.
The thing that made America great is the fact that people work, okay? All right? And then you take the day off. You're spitting in the face of the founding fathers.
And the thing that made America even greater than that is that people come into work and they just kind of don't work as much because no one else is there.
That's true. It was a very subtle slap at yesterday's show and the quality of yesterday's show. That's what that was. I got to admit, it was off the rails.
It would be a self-slap, then, given that I was here.
You were part of it. All right, here we go. A woman decides to climb the base of the Statue of Liberty. I had to look at a picture of it because they said, well, they couldn't get her. They got some special team to come in and rappel down and go get her. And they put a ladder up, and she was going to kick the ladder over. They said that she was less than courteous when they got to her. Then they finally talked her out of it. I had to look at the big picture from behind. Like, how did she get up there in the first place? Does anybody know?
No one seems to know at this point. But honestly, once she gets out of the pokey, maybe that team ought to hire her.
When you realize
she's obviously a pretty good climber,
because the base, you think, okay, it's the base of the Statue of Liberty, anybody can get to the base,
right?
But it's way up there,
and it's straight up. There's not really handholds there. I mean, perhaps maybe what New York should do is make parkour illegal, because she's probably doing
a lot of parkour.
And then she got up there.
See, Jerry Willis of the National Park Service explains what the protester did was definitely illegal.
This week is our busiest week of the year, typically. So on a day like today, we probably get about 22 to 24,000 visitors. But at any one time on the island, there's about 4,500 people when it's at capacity.
Okay. And then you get one of them, one lunatic there at the bottom of the skirt of Lady Liberty. Willis says... it was a problem because on July 4th, it's the busiest day. I think he just sort of said that, didn't he? He's already said that already.
Yeah, let's not play that second.
He doesn't need to say that again, does he?
No.
No, he's just complaining about how hard he has to work on this day.
Yeah. Right. Just not unlike how you opened up the show.
I'm not saying I worked hard yesterday. It's just...
You're just saying that you had to show up
and always have
a pulse yesterday.
Yes, it just bothers me a little bit that people take the day off. And then when they come in, they don't seem guilty.
And no one sends you a note saying, John, we're so proud of you for coming in to work.
I don't need that.
Day.
I don't know. I don't need that. It just, when they come in and back at their desk again, I'm like, oh, okay, look at you. But they don't seem ashamed. There's no shame.
No, there's no shame.
Should be some shame. Immigrants ask Jay Inslee, are these legal immigrants or illegal immigrants? Are these people that filled out the forms and waited in line and paid the $3,000? These are immigrants or illegal immigrants? Jacob, do we make a distinction or is it not important?
These are immigrants' rights activists, so it could be a little bit of both.
Ah, got it. Here we go. Cairo 7 has the story.
The Families Belong Together Coalition brought together a group of immigrants and refugees to share their stories with Governor Inslee and First Lady Trudy. They included an undocumented immigrant who says she was separated from her four children. Aurora told us she was deported to Mexico after she called police to report her husband for domestic violence.
I was thinking that they were going to help me because... they're the police, and instead they arrested me shortly after and just deported me.
After 5 years of separation, she...
Oh, 5 years ago. After 5 years, okay, so she got deported 5 years ago?
After 5 years of separation. I don't know that they actually say when she was deported.
Okay, but what Trump didn't do it.
Well, but I don't think that that's the fundamental point here.
I know, I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, she snuck back into this.
Oh, then she snuck back in.
Country to be with her children. And she attended last Saturday's massive rally at the Federal Detention Center in SeaTac in support of the mothers separated from their children.
What is happening, it's inhumane. And I think that, I mean, like, if you're human, I think we know that. It's inhumane. And I think everybody should be doing something about it.
Governor Inslee told the group Washington State has sued to force the Trump administration to reunify families.
We should never allow the separation of children from their parents. And I'm proud of my state that stood up against that effort.
And the governor confirmed he's refused a request to send Washington National Guard troops to the southern border.
We had an informal request to send our helicopters there, and we declined.
Okay, and then Jayapal and Smith both working on bills to abolish ICE. This is the sort of the battle cry now that's going on. And here's, oh, awesome, New York Senator Kristen Gildebrand I was one of the first members to bring up the idea of eliminating ICE.
I don't think ICE today is working as intended.
Well, you think should get rid of the agency?
I believe that it has become a deportation force. And I think you should separate the criminal justice from the immigration issues. And I think you should reimagine ICE under a new agency with a very different mission and take those two missions out.
Okay. So ICE got its start in 2003 after the 9/11 attack, and it was sort of two divisions. One of them was like catching people and sending them back, and then another part of it was investigating. An investigation arm was also used, I think, for thinking somebody's coming into the country and trying to do something to attack us.
Yeah, it was part of Homeland Security. It was 22 federal agencies that were roped into one of the largest expansions of the federal government in post-war U.S. history.
Yeah. So those that are calling for ICE, I think his piece was in the Washington Post today or yesterday, was this plays right into Trump's hands. That every time you talk about abolishing ICE, it just makes the people on the right that support Trump, or at least are somewhat lean towards some of his policies, say this is the crazies on the left just want to get rid of all enforcement and want to be able to open the borders and let everybody come pouring in.
Well, or you could also say that they want to return it to what it was. I mean, there was questions raised, including by conservatives, including by a major paper in the Heritage Foundation, when ICE was formed to begin with, saying that these functions historically, 70 years prior, worked reasonably well as you can make massive federal bureaucracies work, as separate entities and not combining them into one, because what it did then was essentially frame immigration from a regulated process to a threat.
Yeah.
And that when that happened, that's when you saw the problems now associated with ICE and like hyper-aggressive enforcement, the separation of powers. These sort of things were the outgrowth of changing the way ICE was formed. I mean, the same thing happened to, and if you talk to people in the Coast Guard, the same thing happened to the Coast Guard post 9/11.
Yeah.
It went from sort of a regulatory enforcement, you know, a lot of, you know, enforcing fishing regulations, shipping regulations, things like that, to being a military, more of a military organization. Mm-hmm. And they say they kind of lost their original purpose.
Yeah, their focus.
And that this is what people are saying about ICE. And mind you, the right who may defend ICE, you know, what was it in 2017 when a majority of House Republicans called for the abolition of the IRS? Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on what agency is you don't like at that time, that the political party then calls for the abolishment of that agency. And in neither case is this actually going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know if calling for the ending of the IRS caused the folks on the left to get up in arms and to help sort of motivate them. But certainly this is doing a lot for them. Recent poll shows that Trump's disapproval rating. Here we go. June 8th, his approval rating was at 42%, 54% disapproved, 12% gap. Monday, July 2nd, they take another poll and they find out that Trump's approval rating climbs to 44%. His disapproval drops 51%, a 7-point gap drop.
Which it has been fluctuating like that and will continue to fluctuate.
I know, but
like
you
that,
just figure that
most
all
recent
the,
thing.
Yeah, you just figure all the bad news and seeing the kids separate and crying and stuff. You would assume, like, because most people would find that to be pretty deplorable, that they would dump that on Trump and you would see the numbers come down a little bit. To see the numbers go up a little bit, I don't know how you end up explaining that.
Well, I think that you can take that. I'm not sure that that poll directly reflects the feeling about separation of families, right? I mean, because you have a number, including Ted Cruz, about as conservative as you get as a Republican. Ted Cruz from Texas.
Yeah.
About as conservative as you get on that. Peeling away from that issue and also saying families should not be separated. And then what happened? The administration also said families should not be separated. So clearly people are seeing that that is not a winner, even if they're seeing other fairly harsh policies are.
There was a guy who was setting off fireworks. This is a story every single year. And, of course, all across this great country, greatest country in the world, by the way, eight people lose their life, even though the federal government makes a videotape of mannequins blowing off different parts of their plastic bodies.
But the problem with that, we were watching this before the show. The problem, of course, with this videotape is it's hysterical. It's not. It is not actually because you see they show the mannequin. The mannequin is bent essentially at an L with its head directly in front of the mortar tube in a house. And then they light it, and the head disappears. It isn't just like blown off dramatically.
No.
The head completely vaporizes,
right.
And you don't look at that and see like, oh, well, I guess I'm not going to do that.
But the humor also comes in. That the mannequin's
the music is also pretty great.
And the mannequin's arms don't move.
No, nothing
or
moves.
The person standing there, it's a mannequin, and he has a sort of a pleasant look on his face. It looks like a JCPenney model.
It's like a real-world Looney Tunes cartoon. You actually expect, then, the head to pop back out of the collar, you know, after this thing is
right.
over, because it's just so, it's so dramatically ridiculous.
Right, but again, what adds the humor is, you get the mannequin standing there, and he has a pleasant look, and his whole, from his elbow down, blows off.
And,
he stretches his expression. Doesn't change.
Like, oh, darn it, I did that again.
What? My lucky I got another arm. Yeah. Anyway, they make these things every single year. They waste everybody's
money. It's the
job.
It's the one federal government job I desperately want. Because whoever's doing this has a blast every year.
Oh, you know.
Literally.
So yeah, no. In fact, this year they decided to change up. Rather than having one mannequin girl light another mannequin girl's dress on fire.
Which is a sort of a classic.
That is classic. Yeah.
It's a classic.
That's right. What friends do for each other. First of all, girls wear dresses. It was a dress from the 1940s.
Yeah, I know. It looks like they used last year's dress and sort of turned it around so you could remove the scorch marks.
This year, the girl that set the other girl's dress on fire doesn't have any friends anymore, so her sparkler falls onto her leg and sets her foot on fire. And again, she stands there with a
the same expression
as her father, who just lost an arm 30 yards away. All right, hey. It's all funny until somebody gets hurt. Sandra Olson lives nearby. She describes the house-shaking firework that injured a man. Here we go.
It was huge. I can't even describe it. It was just like a... I've never been around a bomb, but it sounded like a bomb going off. His face was burnt, and so that was basically what I saw, was his face.
Ugh. Of course, neighbors looking out for neighbors.
Was I have little or no sympathy.
Oopsie. Not necessarily the case. Set that one up wrong. Maybe
I'd say that's fairly harsh.
Maybe he comes around. It's 11 seconds. Let's see if he's able to turn this back around. Ready?
Right. Was I have little or no sympathy for people who blow off a hand or a finger or something like that, dude?
Okay, there's 6 more seconds. Can he say
this
something
guy
nice about
is
his
the
neighbor?
Guy who creates the federal videos.
Can this guy say something nice about his neighbor? He's got 6 seconds. Yes or no?
I say no.
Stupid thing with fireworks. And I come home and 5 minutes later, here it is in the front yard.
Okay, there it is.
Here it is in the front yard. Not here is a local tragedy. Like, I predicted this, and there it is. Look, buddy.
I
have
front
no sympathy
yard,
for
not
you.
My side yard.
Stop bleeding in my front yard.
Right in the front yard. Let's try to guess where the guy's from. Auburn.
Yeah.
We don't know anything else other than the fact that I think Ursula had the... He is in the hospital undergoing surgery.
Multiple surgeries, yeah.
Yep, every year, it's as you always say, the worst thing, the last words just before someone does something stupid is what?
Here, hold my beer.
I talked to a boat guy yesterday who told me, the good old days are gone. I said, what are the good old days? He goes, the gas works. They used to shoot off those fireworks. They'd go up in the air. They would explode. And then you couldn't see it. They were teeny tiny bits of burning metal would come floating down. Little tiny microscopic little bits of metal would come down and land on boat biminis or the canvas tops of boats. And slowly or quickly burn right through. And then he goes, the next morning we would have all these calls from all these people. Hey, something poked holes in my canvas top. And he says, and we would just rake in the money. He said, well, those are the good old days.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. That actually, I think a lot of it was, have you ever seen magnesium burn?
Yes.
It's astounding.
Yes. It's really fun.
And that's what they used to pack fireworks with.
Oh, okay.
Was this thing you literally can't, well, not literally, you can nearly not put it out, certainly not by normal means.
Yeah.
And these little tiny sparks would land on something and burn right through someone's shingles or their old, you know, cedar shingles on their house or something like that, or apparently boat canvas covers.
There we are. All right. City of Edmonds is the latest to consider gun safety measures, and Q13 was there. Was this yesterday they had this during the press conference?
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Well, somebody was working. Q13 was out there,
right? The City of Edmonds is the latest to consider gun safety measures. The city council president making the announcement at a local park full of kids playing on a sunny day. These are the ones he hopes his proposal will protect.
These lock boxes that you see before you are not some prop. They are my gun boxes. So if I say they will keep them out of the hands of my children, but they will be there when I need them, you can take my word for it. Many of my fellow gun owners are responsible. But now we need all of you to be.
Every year, hundreds of kids gain access to one of these irresponsibly stored firearms and then use it to unintentionally or intentionally shoot themselves or someone else.
The proposed legislation would require guns to be locked up in homes. And it's a topic of security that is circulating round and round in communities throughout our region.
It's open. It's locked. I'll enter my password.
By the way, when he did that, the first time you saw his password.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, I was going to back it up and just memorize it. What are the chances am I ever going to be? Is it the mayor, Edmonds? Who is it?
Something like city council
city
member.
City council member, I think, yeah.
But I know his number. And if you watch the video, you'd know it too.
Well, you know, and the funny thing is, like a lot of people, that's probably his PIN code for his ATM card as well.
Unlocked.
Unlocked.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
And
so
you
now
can
we
do
have
it,
access
you can
to
do
everything
house
he does,
as well.
Right? Probably the key entry on his car.
11 states across this greatest country in the world have a safe storage lock requirements. 11 do.
What do you think about safe storage requirements?
56% of them. Let me throw up more just strange numbers. 56% of gun owners that answered honestly said, "Yeah, I don't keep it in a box. I keep it in the drawer next to me, or right. I got it under my bed, or I have it under my pillow, or I have it right here in my right hand.
In my holster.
In my holster.
Get off my, stop asking me questions, get off my porch.
Get off my phone." And with that, they shoot their own phone.
Right.
Yeah, no, 56% say, no, I don't, that's not what I want. And one of the main reasons when they asked him, why don't you store it in a safe? They said, if I want to get to it, I need to get to it quickly. And I don't, if seconds count, I need every single second, so I want to just be able to open the drawer and get it. And they also say, I don't have any kids living in the house. I don't have anybody that's suicidal. It's just me and my 15 dogs, and I'm okay. I threw the 15 dogs in
right,
there.
Yeah, I understand that. But you still haven't answered the question.
Am I okay with it?
Yeah, what do you think?
When the kids were young, it was in a safe. Right. Now they're not young anymore, it's not in a safe.
So you think that maybe narrowing the standard to if you have kids between ages of infants and something else?
Go ahead, pass the law, make everybody feel good, but let's see you enforce it. The only way you'd be able to enforce this thing is if somebody were to get in, get the gun, could you then also be held responsible for the illegal activity of that individual with your gun?
Typically what happens is it's difficult to enforce,
yes.
But it's a value added as far as enforcement goes. If you enter a situation, you see the gun hasn't been stored correctly, particularly if that gun has been used for something or an accidental shooting, then they add that on top of it to do additionally penalize whomever it is that's a gun owner. I actually have no problems with safe storage of guns. I think it's actually a terrific idea. I don't know what it is. Something like 1,300 kids a year die in accidental shooting. Something like 5,700. It's actually grown into the third leading cause of child death,
yeah,
shootings. And so, I don't know. It seems to me like we did this with there was arguments about child safety seats when they became a requirement. I think some of these things are actually not a bad idea because sometimes you have to force people to be a little smarter than what their baseline maybe is.
Yeah, I got it. Child safety seats, one thing, you'd see it in the car. The other one is they're always fear the government coming into their house to start looking around. If you went into this woman's house and you happened to be a black giraffe, she would shoot you, and it would be probably the best thing for you. I didn't realize as giraffes turn older, they turn darker.
They do turn darker in some cases, not every case, but yeah, I mean it's essentially burning the village in order to save it. That's what she claims anyway.
And a poacher ends up getting poached himself. We'll come right back. This is our wildlife segment that we normally do on a Thursday here at the Tom and Curley Show, 97.3 FM. Alrighty. A lot of dogs coming out of a drug-induced haze after last night. Like, hey, what's going on? 4th of July. Dog running around, and all of a sudden, I feel sleepy. a lot of child Benadryl given to many canines to try to keep them calm.
Yeah, we had to put our cat inside to make sure, because our cat goes in and out, to make sure our cat didn't panic one year. Our neighborhood is particularly filled with fireworks enthusiasts.
Wow. Spellbinding. Thank you, Mike. Yeah. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. You could text as well at 98973. We do love to hear from you, especially if you want to try to slip a particular word into the show that seems to be the ongoing theme. Wait till Tom gets back and finds out that that's a new thing happening on the show. But what's wrong? You're not talking? You don't want to talk? You want me to apologize for that? Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
Welcome to Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. Today we are bringing you a special wildlife report on shark behavior.
No, we're not. But thank you, Marlon Perkins. We're going to bring you, this is the segment, if you're new to the Tom and Curly Show, you know that on Thursdays at 9:35, right after I insult my co-host, I like to then, we do stories about wildlife. And in this particular case, we're talking about giraffes,
right,
hungry lions, and rhino sperm.
All right. I'll take rhino sperm for 100.
Well, why don't we start with giraffes instead?
Okay, fair enough.
Okay. So there's a gal who posts a picture, which I think you know you're going to get in trouble, don't you? Ever since the dentist went and shot the lion, posting photographs of yourself around big game, especially things like giraffes and lions.
Well, and all of the Trump kids who are required to pose with dead animals, apparently, because they have hundreds of these pictures.
People don't mind you posing with a big shark with its bloody teeth, but like a giraffe, the woman's got the neck of the giraffe sort of posed in such a way. She's standing there, she's got a big rifle. She went and killed the thing, and she's now just getting just a boatload of problems because of it. So she's had to go on and defend herself, and people are now sort of taking sides on this. I think a couple of people have asked for her to be killed, or at least this whole thing to be stopped. Today's show talked to the hunter who defended these hunts. This hunter says,
there is a connection with the animal, and just because we hunt them doesn't mean we don't have a respect for them.
Money that she paid to go on this hunt is going directly into the local community. It's going to benefit those animals because now there's an economic benefit.
So a couple of celebrities have come out and tweeted that they're now, giraffes are on the red one or whatever it is, the category of endangered.
Yeah, the giraffe population is declining fairly rapidly. I think there's fewer than 100,000 giraffes left in all of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem here is that it really isn't associated with hunting.
Yep.
It's associated with habitat reduction, which is a massive problem in Africa regarding wild animals. That doesn't separate out. I've hunted. For someone who did pheasant hunting in Idaho when I was a kid, I do not understand the thrill of, I guess I could understand maybe if you're, you know, you're out there on your own and you want to hunt a lion, you have just sort of the thrill of that sort of thing. And it's not sort of expedition grade military operation, but to kill a giraffe, relatively big, relatively easy target.
Yeah.
Certainly not something that I guess every now and then a giraffe might kill a zookeeper or something inadvertently. But it just seems like such an odd animal to want to go out and hunt.
Well, she says that this is an older giraffe, no longer capable of procreating. And the older giraffe ends up killing and has killed three younger male giraffes. So she says, in effect, what I'm doing is I'm taking out an old giraffe that can't help the herd. It only hurts the herd, and therefore I'm doing everybody a favor.
It's kind of a dumb argument, though. I mean, again, this is the way species have evolved. Eventually, a younger giraffe takes out that giraffe. It becomes the top breeding male in the herd, and then everything sort of perpetuates like that. So I'm sure the giraffe herd appreciates her help in getting this guy out so other people can move into management.
Yeah.
I understand her idea, but it's kind of a dumb excuse. Look, if someone would just say, who's a big game hunter, didn't give me the conservation argument, didn't give me this is funding local communities, didn't tell me that giraffe meat now is feeding an orphanage or whatever it is that they're saying, which they did say about this.
Okay.
Just say, hey, it's big and I dig killing things. That I actually find is a much more plausible answer. I'm a meat eater. I understand that. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually, you know, I understand also that giraffe populations and a lot of populations, rhinos are another one, the populations are being more, the greater hurt is habitat destruction than it is hunting.
Right, but you can't sell, hey, I just like to shoot big things and watch them collapse at the knees.
Well, but if you're a sentient human being, you understand that that's actually what they're saying.
I mean, they don't need to say that. They can talk about the fact their money's going towards conservation.
Right.
The bones of a poacher, they haven't identified the guy yet, but they're pretty darn sure that that used to be a human being over there and parts of it over there, there, and there. The bones of the man around a lion camp, and what they believe happened is the guy went in there to get one of these lions or something nearby, and the lions got him first. I looked up the whole thing on why they poach, poachers poach. 95% of poachers that are out there are poaching. They do it primarily for the meat, and they want to get some additional money. Although they're not often the poorest people in the village, they just want a little bit more money, and they say primarily their number one reason is they want to be able to afford better schools for their kids.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So the Did you see the actual report on who the guy was?
No.
It was interesting. I was taking a read through that. It turned out he was an older male, was not reproducing anymore. And when there was like several younger males who, you know, who were anxious to get into the sort of the line of available breeders. And I think this is what happened. I mean, I got to say that I appreciate the Lions culling the herd a little bit in the name of conservation.
Yes, that was good. They no apparently not much sympathy for the guy. I didn't realize that that's the reason they're taking the animals out, and they normally like to kill something that's easier to kill. It would be like a wildebeest or something, but every once in a while they do go after something like a lion. Beautiful embryos created for the near extinct rhino sperm. Of course, we promised to get to this. You wanted rhino sperm for $100?
Yes.
Washington Post letting us see that we're able to take the sperm, and now eventually we'll be able to produce another rhino.
Yeah. We're expecting science to kind of bail us out of the problems we've created in a variety of areas. I think animal preservation of endangered species is one of those. But we then get into a place in which we have, for example, with cheetahs, where the actual available population is so narrow, there's so much crossbreeding that you're getting animals that are not very healthy as a result. I think with rhinos, they still feel like the population is large enough that they can maybe extend the life of this northern white rhino species that is nearly there's two left, and both are sterile. So there is really no way to do this except through some form of in vitro fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I think that's good, but it still doesn't really speak to the larger problem of why, how we actually got to this point.
How many? I forget the number I'd seen a couple of years ago. The number of animals that go extinct every single year. It's pretty remarkable that we're just sort of rolling through a bunch, and small ones you'd never heard of before, didn't know anything about it, and all of a sudden they come and go. A friend of mine say, if you want to hunt something, hunt a fly. It's very, very difficult to kill a fly.
Yeah, mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes are good as well. You don't have to shoot, because as you pointed out earlier about the giraffe, it'd be probably pretty easy to shoot a giraffe.
I'm guessing it's...
Or kill a giraffe with your bare hand.
I gotta
go
say
hunting with your bare
hand. It's harder to elk hunt in the Cascades than to go on a full expedition grade hunt for a giraffe. Do something with a little bit of challenge to it.
Only 17% of Americans could find Afghanistan on a map, but a six-year-old somehow, we don't know, is able to name every single country. And you would think, oh, this would be interesting. But when you hear it on the radio, boy, does it suck. But we'll do that for you.
You guys suck.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do more of that. We come right back. Do you ever have any outstanding qualities as a six-year-old, Mike Lewis? Like, what were you known for around the block or the house as a six-year-old? Boy, Mike Lewis, get him started on this and look out at the age of six.
Not much. I would say, I had glasses already at that point.
Okay, that's
so
good.
I was known for having glasses. My personality didn't really extend beyond that.
I got Mike Lewis. Look out. He's got glasses.
He's got
on.
Glasses. There he goes with glasses.
He's not going to get anything in his eye. He's got glasses on. Yeah. So this six-year-old, of course, he's from Canada, is able to...
Why, of course, he's from Canada?
I should read that in there. Able to name every single country alphabetically. And you'd think, well, this is going to be, wow, this is pretty good. But after, like, the fourth country?
I'd say after the second.
Because he doesn't sing it. Right. You don't get caught up in sort of a crazy fun feeling.
Afghanistan, right. Albania, Algeria, Andorra, Angola, Antigua and Barbuda, Argentina, Armenia, Australia, Austria, Azerbaijan, Bahamas, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Barbados, Belarus, Belgium, Belize, Benin.
Okay, hang on. Let's fix this.
China, Bolivia, Bosnia, Herzegovina, Botswana, Brazil, Brunei, Bulgaria, Burkina Faso, Burundi, Cambodia, Cameroon, Canada.
Say what? Let's do this. Let's let him keep going, and we'll play another story simultaneously along with this one. Okay?
That sounds terrific.
Okay, here we go. So this is Green Lake safe to swim in? This goes back to 2014. Dave Ross put out a piece about Green Lake and sort of continued the myth that, or perhaps just this idea that it wasn't a safe place to swim. So then the Seattle Times picked up, can you swim at Green Lake?
Afghanistan, Albania.
The headline says that scientists have discovered a virus that makes humans more stupid, and it's been found in water. Does this mean that you need to worry about swimming in algae-infected ponds or, God forbid, Green Lake?
These viruses are so common. It's actually very rare when we get a water sample where we do not find the viruses. So people are undoubtedly being exposed to them all the time. Anytime you go down to your local swimming hole, pond, lake, any kind of water activity, you're getting exposed. We don't know what level of exposure would be required to have some sort of effect.
United States of America, Uruguay, Uzbekistan, Vanuatu, Vatican City, Venezuela, Vietnam, Western Sahara, Yemen, Zambia, and Zimbabwe.
There you go. By the way, let me ask you now, is Green Lake polluted or not?
Uruguay?
I can't.
I'm sorry, what are you talking?
Sorry. Were you saying something? So I think the general gist of the Green Lake is that it's located in the United States.
Venezuela?
And it is safe to swim in, although you can get swimmer's itch. And you want to hear the gross thing that swimmer's itch is? It is a microscopic larvae that is released from a snail that goes into the water. It normally likes to go into a parasite like a duck or a bird or something. So it sees you, it attaches itself, burrows into your skin, but then once it gets in there, it's like, hey, I can't get any blood out of this, and it dies. So it burrows in and then dies inside your skin. So when you come out of the water and all those red bumps, those are actual dead microscopic larvae.
So you're not perpetuating the notion that it's safe to swim in.
No, it's safe.
The point was,
like, it's not going to kill you.
That it used to be bad. It's actually getting a lot
better. You don't get as much
and
larvae.
And it's not actually as polluted as Lake Washington and some other beaches. And so they're saying, yeah,
top
you want to swim there.
And again, they say that best thing, get out of the water, shower off, and just imagine that under your skin is dead
But to
larvae.
Talk about the more important story of the segment, don't you feel bad? Like, this kid's friends forever are going to be whispering, like, don't mention countries.
Oh, I know.
Don't say countries around him. Don't do it. He's going to start.
Let's see him do it in reverse. That'll be tomorrow. We'll be right back.